Okay, welcome everybody for coming to the Parsha Shir today. I want to thank Bernie Stahl once again for giving us of his Torah. He not only does between Mincha and Ma'ariv every day, but here he is for one of our weekly Parsha Shir in Bernie.
Do you have a sheet?
Yes, no.
Okay, today's topic is Migdal Bavel. Now, if you think about it, Migdal Bavel is one of the most opaque parashios in the Torah. We don't know who's involved. There are no names here. We don't know. They want to build a tower. We don't know why they want to build a tower. They want to build it up l'shamayim. We don't know what that means. God doesn't like it. We have absolutely no idea why God doesn't like it. So the one thing that we can say about this parsha is that we know virtually nothing. We know absolutely nothing. Now, if you want to give a shir on something, this is the best thing to give it on, because nobody can ever tell you that you're wrong. So I'm really happy that I get a chance. But just in case somebody has any doubts whether it is opaque, I'm just going to quote for a second the Midrash Tanchuma, which says, "Maaseh dor hamabul nisparshu maasehem." So the Midrash Tanchum essentially says the same thing, that it's opaque. It says, Dor HaMabul, we know exactly what they did, what the problem is. Dor HaFloga, we don't have the slightest idea what they did wrong. Okay, so when we have something like this, what exactly do we do? So obviously we would look at Meforshim. The problem with Meforshim, they say something, but we don't have the slightest idea why they're saying it. So what we can do is we can take a look at a perek like this and look at its relationship to other prakim. Is there another perek that explains this? Does this perek explain something else? If we have something like that, then maybe we can understand what's going on. Also, sometimes you can tell from certain things about language. Now, one of the things we're going to use to try to explain this is something called the chiastic structure. I don't know if everybody here knows what a chiastic structure is. I'll just explain it simply. A chiastic structure means that the first you can divide your text into segments. The first segment corresponds to the last one, the second to the next to the last one, third to the third from last, etc. So if you look at your handy-dandy Renat source sheet, the first thing we'll look at a little bit later is the chiastic structure. I just want to make sure everybody knows what it is. So the way it is, you have Aleph, the very first one. The last one is Aleph 1. So in other words, Aleph corresponds to Aleph 1, Beis corresponds to Beis 1, etc. And if you look at the thing, one of the things you notice about this chiastic structure is that the first half is what the people do, and the second half is what God does. So the chiastic structure itself can be divided into two things: what do the people do and what God does. So we're going to look at the chiastic structure a little bit later, and hopefully this can explain to us what the heck is going on here. So that's essentially what we're going to do. A chiastic structure, it's not carved in stone. So for example, Rav Tzvi Grumet has something very similar to this, but if you look at Daled 1, it says Vayered Hashem. He has his own section for Vayered Hashem. He splits it out. So these chiastic structures can very often be done in different ways, but there's an essential way in which these things should be split up. So what I'm going to do is take certain things from Rav Grossman, Rav Forman, some other people, and put something together, and let's see if we can have some idea of what the heck's going on here. So the way I'm going to do it is I'm going to read this thing, ask some questions, things that make sense, that don't make sense, and let's see what we can get out of this. So we start off with Pasuk Aleph, a good place to start. It's this is Parakeet Aleph, by the way, in case there's anybody who doesn't know. Not the sheet, the Chumash. So it says, Vayichi chol ha'aretz, safa echas udvarim achadim. The whole land, whatever that means, that important, was just one language, and dvarim achadim. Dvarim achadim seems to mean that it was monolithic. Everybody spoke the same, everybody thought the same, and that's what it seems to mean. So for example, if you look at Rashi says, we're not going to look at it inside, but he says, Ba'u be'etza achat. They had one idea. What was the idea? They want to make a war with heaven. I'm not interested so much in the war with heaven. We're not going to go in that direction. But the important thing is that Rashi sees Dvarim Achadim as they all thought exactly the same way. And that's what we have right now. Okay, so now we're going to go to Pasuk Beis. There it says, Vayhi binas am mikedem. They traveled from the east. Vayim tzuvik abe'eret shinor vayeshvu sham. And they found a valley in the land of Shinor, and they settled there. So these people could be nomads, so they're going from one place to the other. They find some place, it looks nice, and they settle there. As far as coming from the east, if you assume that these are refugees from the Mabul or something like that, then these people are coming from Turkey. They're coming from Hare Ararat, and then they're coming to Babel. So that's, you know, a very simple pshat way of looking at it. But when it says, Vayis'u mikedem, b'nasam mikedem, can anybody think of any other place, and let's say before this, in which it talks about something that was kedem? Okay, Adam Harishon. In other words, Gan Eden is something that is Mikedem. The pasuk says, "Vayita Hashem Elokim Gan Be'eden Mikedem." So I might be able to read this that they're coming from Gan Eden. Now they can't be coming from Gan Eden because it's after the Mabul, but it has to mean something. So one possibility that we're going to explore here tonight is something we've mentioned between Mincha Maariv several times. And that is that when you have a demabul, you have a creation and you have a recreation. Hashem in Perek Aleph creates the world in 7 days, and then you have the demabul. What happens in the demabul? On the second day of creation, what happens is you have the waters up here, you have the waters up there, God separates them. The demabul, the separation goes away. The waters that are up here come down here, and that's it, and everything is destroyed. So that's what essentially what the demabul is. So what happens after that, I'm not going to go into that in detail, is that after that you have a recreation story. The same way that in the 7 days of creation, on the fifth day, or the third day, it says the water separated and you could see a certain amount of land. You have psukim like that by the Mabul. The water is receding, you see the land. So the psukim seem to correspond one to the other. So you have so by the Mabul you have a creation, and then you have a recreation. Okay, creation is Perek Aleph. The recreation is after the Mabul, when the waters recede. Now, one of the questions we have to ask is, how far does recreation go? Are we recreating Perek Aleph, Perek Beis? What about Chei Adam HaRishon? Are we recreating that too? Now, one of the things we're going to argue is that that gets recreated as well. Now, one of the reasons for that is that you can argue that what's going on in Chei Adam HaRishon is that it's an archetypal story. Why is Chei Adam HaRishon important? It might be important because we all do it every day. We all suffer Chei Adam HaRishon every single day. It's an archetypal story, and that's why it's important. That's why it's in the Torah. So it would make sense that after this recreation, this new world, you're going to have Chei Adam HaRishon again. And we talked about at length between Mincha Maariv about how Noah's drunkenness is an example of the recreation of Chet Adam HaRishon. Don't have time to go into that again. But the question then becomes, what about this story over here? Is this a recreation of Chet Adam HaRishon? The fact that they're coming Mikedem, which is Gan Eden, might indicate that the answer to that is yes. So let's look at Pasuk Gimel. It says, Bayomru ish ehu, hava nil bina levenim. One said to the other, we're going to literally brick bricks. We're going to make a fire. Fatihilam halavena la eben, vachemor hayat lahem lachomer. What essentially is going on in this pasuk is technology. Until then they've had stones, now they have bricks, so the advance of technology. Now, one of the problems with this pasuk is the whole story of Migdal Bavel is 9 psukim. Why are they having a whole pasuk that has to deal with how you make a brick? It doesn't really seem to belong there. There's another problem with that. Immediately after this, it talks about the bricks. It says about building a tower. Now, supposing I'm going to build a house, how would I say it? Would I say, I want to build a house and therefore I need bricks? Or am I going to say, I have bricks, so let me build a house? I think most people are going to do number one. That's not what's going on here. They're saying we have bricks. That's Pasuk, whatever we're on, is Pasuk Gimel. And then Pasuk Dalet, they're talking about the Migdal. There's something wrong here. So let's go to Pasuk Dalet. Vayomru, hava nivne lanu ir u migdal, v'roshow bashamayim, v'naseh lanu shem, penafutz al penei kol aretz. So they say they're going to build a city and a tower, and the top of the tower is going to be in heaven, and we're going to make ourselves a name so that we're not spread out over the entire world. Now, there's a lot going on in this pasuk. First of all, why would you build a tower? Now, there are certain innocent reasons you can build a tower. Some Perushim point out that if you have a tower that's high enough, supposing I'm a shepherd, I take the sheep out a very long way, I might get lost. I might not be able to get back to the city. If I have a tower that's high enough, I know where to get back. Another possibility is defense. If you look through Tanakh, you find plenty of places in which they build Vayiven Uziyahu Migdalim Yerushalayim. There's nothing wrong with that. And as far as this, there are some people who say they wanted to hold up the sky so there wouldn't be another Mabul. That's also something that is mentioned. Or maybe nothing. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he talks about the buildings in Eretz Canaan, he says, Arim Gedolos B'Tzirot Bashamayim. So it might be simply a phrase.
How do you relate the pen of foots then? In other words, I'm building a tower to get a name, because otherwise I will be spread out amongst the world.
Okay, let's do one thing. Let's do one thing at a time. Okay.
Got it.
Okay, sorry about that. First of all, it's the Rosho Bashamayim. Now, I'm an engineer. Okay, Shari is tittering about that idea, but I'm an engineer. You're all engineers. You want to build a tower that reaches Shamayim. And here's the question for your final exam. Would you build it in a valley or would you build it on a mountain? Where are they building it? Did that make sense? No. Okay, good. So we're all in agreement. So one possibility is that this idea of Shamayim is not literal. So it'd be something else. Who lives in Shamayim symbolically? God. So that's why you get a lot of Mephorshim who say they want to battle with God. The idea that the thing is going to go to Shamayim doesn't make any sense literally. So maybe they want to battle with God. God is the one who lives in Shamayim, and that's what they're trying to do. But there's another possibility, based on what we said before. They want to be like God. They want to reach Shamayim. B'sem kelokim yodei tov v'ra. Reaching Shamayim means I want to be like God in a certain way, whatever that means. Now then it says, v'na'ase lanu shem. We're going to make a name for ourselves. Now, can anybody name one name in this perek, in this story? No. They want to make a name for themselves, and the Torah, perhaps on purpose, doesn't tell you who the heck these people are. And if you want to see whether the Torah, let's just for one second go to Perek Hey, Pasuk Dalit. I can find it. Okay. I think I have the wrong pasuk. Whatever it is, what it talks about there, this is the one about B'nai Elohim. I don't know if I found the right parak or not. But what it talks about is B'nai Elohim. It says this is just before the story of the Mabul. The B'nai Elohim come to the B'nos Ha'adam. And these are called Giborim Anshei Shem. The same thing as here. Men of renown. What? Oh, okay, fine. Thank you. So, just one parak off. Okay. So Hanifilim Hayu Ba'aretz Bayamim Ahem V'gam Acharechein Asher Yavo B'nei Elohim El B'nos Ha'adam V'yaldu Lohem Hema HaGiborim. These are Giborim, these are heroes. Asher Me'olam Anshei Shem. Now if you look at this story, it's the same thing as Migdal Bavel. You don't find one name, you don't know who these people are, everybody's anonymous. Not only are they anonymous, we don't know who the B'nai Elohim are, we don't know what the B'nai Elohim are. There are all kinds of midrashim and stuff like that who says these are fallen angels. Now, that's unlikely, but B'nai Elohim, nobody can figure out what it means. You can't get more anonymous than that. Not only do we not know who these people are, we don't know what these people are. And it's the same thing that is going on over here. they want to make a name for themselves. And the Torah seems to, on purpose, make sure that we don't know who any of these people are, or sometimes what these people are. Now there is somebody who is Vayikra B'Shem, and that's the next parak, which is Avram Avinu. There it says Vayikra B'Shem Hashem. Avram doesn't want to make a name for himself. Vayikra B'Shem Hashem. Does everybody in this room know who Avram Avinu is? I suspect that the answer is yes. And why do we? Why? Because Hashem says Bi'agav LaShemecha. Avram is not making his name great. Hashem says, I will make your name great. Va'agadla shemecha. Now, if you look at the word of agadla, you don't have to look at it. Take my word for it, it's there. Is there a word like va'agadla in our pasuk? A word similar to va'agadla. We're in pasuk hey. No, pasuk dalad, right? Right. Is there a word like va'agadla in pasuk dalad? Right, Migdal. So you can argue that one of the purposes of the Migdal is to make their name great. It seems to serve the opposite purpose with Avram. Somebody else is making his name great. They want to make their own name great, and because of that, it fails. Okay, then it says, Pennafutz, we're going to be spread out. Now, I don't think this is going to answer Howie's question right now. Maybe what I say later may answer him a little bit better. But it says that we'll be spread out. There's a problem here. There's a paradox. There's a contradiction. You have two opposite movements. On the one hand, vertically, they want to go up as high as they can. What about horizontally? What do they want to do? They want to stay in one place. Rav Amnan Bazak notices, and he says that they want to stay in the valley. They don't want to go out of the valley for whatever reason. And Rav Amnan Bazak noticed that the language in here and the language by Chet Adam HaRishon is very similar. But he says that what's going on here, if you look at this horizontally, you have these people, maybe they're refugees of the Mabul, they're scared of the Mabul, or something like that. They're afraid to leave the valley. So vertically, they want to go with Shamayim. Horizontally, they're scared out of their wits about leaving the valley. So you have this total contradiction. Now, sometimes a person wants to make himself heroic because he's scared. So we do have things like that. But what you have is this type of contradiction. Now, to some extent, you can argue that maybe you have that in Chet Adam HaRishon as well. Let's remember Chet Adam HaRishon. B'yisem kelokim. They want to be like God. Okay, well, what happens when they're found out? They hide like little rabbits, right? And when God asks them, what happened? It's her fault. It's a snake's fault. This is not; these are not giborim. They want to be like God. They're full of whatever. And when it comes to it, essentially what happens is that they're scared. And to some extent, that seems to be happening over here too. Vertically, they want to go to the Shemayim. Horizontally, they're scared out of their wits of leaving this valley. So far, what we have is we have found several paradoxes here. They want to build the Shemayim, and they build it in the valley. They're Giborim, but they want to be Giborim. They want to have a great name, but they're afraid to move out of the valley. So let's go to the next pasuk. That's pasuk He. It says, "Vayered Hashem l'ros es ha'ir ves hamigdal." God goes down to see the city and the tower. Asher banu b'nei ha'adam. There are two things here that are important. They want to build something to Shemayim, right? God symbolically lives in Shemayim. If they build something to Shemayim, does God have to come down in order to see it? No. So in essence, what's going on here is that the pasuk is mocking them. They're building something to Shemayim. God has to come down just in order to see it. So there's a certain mocking going on here. That's one thing that's going on. The second is, how do you say, it says B'nei Ha'adam. If I want to say people, how do I say people? Do I say B'nei Ha'adam, or do I say B'nei Adam? What's the proper way of saying it? The proper way of saying it is B'nei Adam, not B'nei Ha'adam. So what does B'nei Ha'adam mean? It seems to mean a particular person. So who is the particular person? Adam HaRisha. So the Midrash says, in fact, what do you mean B'nei Ha'adam? Who do you think is going to be? Sons of camels? Those are the words of the Midrash. I didn't come up with that. So it says, no, it's sons of Adam HaRishon. In other words, the Midrash says, it's the same sin as Adam HaRishon, And the Ramban says that he agrees with the Midrash. Okay, so now we're going to Pasuk Vav and start tying these things a little bit together. Vayomer Hashem, Hein Am Echad, B'Safa Achas L'Chulam. There's it's one nation and one language for everyone. V'Zeh Hachilam Lasos. They started to do this. The Ata Lo Yibatzer Mehem Kol Asher Yizmu Lasos. There's no way of stopping them from anything that they want to do. Okay, now the big problem that nobody can figure out is what is bothering God. What's bothering him? So, the way we're going to try to figure this out is using our handy-dandy Renat source sheet. So, we're going to look at Rav Yonason Grossman's chiastic structure, and if we find that it's in Gimel 1. If you look at how he puts this together, Aleph, Kol Ha'aretz Safa Achas, the very last one, one Aleph, he throws them out of the land. And you can see, if you look closely, I don't know if we have time to go through the entire chiastic structure, but if you look at it closely, you can see how he gets all these correspondences. Now, sometimes what works with a chiastic structure is that if you have a correspondence, and then you see all of a sudden the correspondence doesn't seem to make sense, then the chiastic structure is teaching you something. That's one of the ways in which chiastic structures are used. So, in our thing, is Gimel 1. What we just read, Vayomer Hashem, Hein Am Echad V'Safa Achas L'Chulam. So what is bothering God? I would think that what's bothering God is the city and the Migdal. But in the chiastic structure, that doesn't work. Dalet, Hava Nivne Lanu Ir U'Migdal, is corresponds to Dalet 1. It doesn't correspond to Gimel 1. Can everybody see that? Gimel 1 is what we just read, the pasuk we just read. So this is Gimel 1. So we have to look at what is Gimel. Gimel is Vayomru Ish El Re'ehu Hava Nil B'na L'Veinim V'Nisrafal Yisrafa V'Tehi Lahem HaLeveina La'Aven V'Hachemor Haya Lahem L'Chomer. If you think that this chiastic structure is working, what is bothering God? The city doesn't bother him and the tower doesn't bother him. What bothers him? The bricks. According to the chiastic structure, what's bothering him with the bricks? Remember when we read about the bricks, the whole thing didn't make any sense. It sounded like the bricks is a central thing, and because we have bricks, we're going to build a house, or whatever we're going to do. The whole thing didn't make any sense. In the chiastic structure, what seems to be bothering God is the bricks. So essentially, what is bothering God here? Not the tower. That's not bothering him. The city isn't bothering him at all. What's bothering him is the technology. That's what is bothering God according to this chiastic structure. And also it makes sense according to the fact that the psukim seem to be out of order. Now why would technology bother God? Well, one possibility is to Barbanel. He sees technology as being a problem all over the place. Technology, you're not natural, you're artificial. And yeah, it's amazing because Barbanel is this person who was the counselor to kings. He sounds like somebody from the 60s. But Abarbanel sees this everywhere, and to some extent he has something to rely on. If you go back to earlier Prakim, who are the ones who really get technology going? B'nai Kayin. The sons of Kayin are the ones. So it sounds like you could argue that Abarbanel knows what he's talking about in terms of the idea that there is a problem with technology. But, and also if you say it's technology, even without the Abarbanel, maybe the technology here is a problem, not all over the place. Now, if the problem is technology, that could be one reason for Dvarim Achadim. If you want to build something, what is one of the most basic rules of management theory? Everybody has to communicate. Everybody has to be on the same page. If one person is not on the same page, then the bricks are not going to be built when you need them for the tower, or something is going to be out of sync. You need Dvarim Achadim in order for technology. So what seems to be bothering God is not the city, it's not the tower, it's the technology. Now, did they finish the building? Did they finish the Migdal? You can't really tell. Well, it says, Vayered L'Ros Es Ha'ir B'Hamigdal. If God went down to see the Migdal, it sounds as if the Migdal was already finished. Doesn't seem to bother him. You don't have to say that. It says vayichadlu livnot esair. So it's very possible that maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But according to the chiastic structure and according to the order of the psukim, it seems that what is bothering God is the technology. Now, I'm going to read to you now something from Rav Grossman. This is not this is just psukim. Now take a look at what we just read. Vayomer Hashem, Hein Am Echad V'Sofa Achas L'Chulam Zahachilum La'Sos V'Atal Lo Yibatzer Mehem Kol Asher Yazmu La'Sos. Now I'm going to read from you what God says about after Adam and Chava sinned. Look at the psukim and see if they look similar. Vayomer Hashem Elokim, Hein Ha'Adam Ha'Yok Achad Mimenu L'Das Tov V'Ra. V'Ata Pen Yishlach Yado. What seems to be bothering, first of all, if you look at it, the form seems to be very similar. Now, what is bothering God over there? God is worried that Adam is going to eat from the Eitz HaChayim and he's going to live forever. It's not so much what has happened until now, but God is worried about the potential. So, since the language here is so similar to there, what seems to be happening is God's not so much worried about what they've done until now. He's worried about the potential of unrestrained technology. Now they can do whatever the heck they want. That's what he says. That's what he's worried about. And that's the problem. It's not so much the building. They're not going to reach Shemayim. That's not happening. And also if you look at the pasuk, it says la'asos twice. V'zehachilom la'asos, they started to do it. Kol asher yozmu la'asos. They started to do, and they're going to be able to do whatever they want. And that seems to be what God is worried about. Now let's go now to Pasuk Zayin. He says, Hava nirda v'novla sham sfasam asher lo yishmu ish sfas reyehu. Now, so God says he's going to take their language, he's going to mix everything up. Now, if the problem is technology, what is the best way of interfering with technology? Is stopping the communication. Like what we said before, one of the most important things about management theory is communication. You have different departments, each department has to talk to the other one, you have somebody making the bricks, you have somebody transporting the bricks, you have somebody building the tower. If they're not talking to each other, you can't build anything. Technology does not work without communication. That's one of the most important things of management theory. So what God is doing is he's stopping the ability to facilitate the communication. That essentially what's going on here. And that's the reason that God is trying to mix up the language so nobody can talk to another. Also, if you notice the plural is also found in Bereshit by Eitz Hadas. Dehain ha'adam ha'yot ke'achad mimenu. Again, you have the same plural as you have by Eitz Hadas. Now then it says, Vayafetz Hashem osam misham al p'nei kal ha'aretz vayachdelu livnos ha'ir. God spread them out. They were in the city, now they're outside the city. In a certain sense, you can say they're exiled from the city. Right? They were in the city, they're communicating, now God spreads them out, so they're outside the city. What is the punishment for Adam and Chava after they do the sin? They're thrown out of Gan Eden. They're exiled from Gan Eden. So in a certain sense, the punishment for Migdal Bavel is exactly the same punishment as Adam and Chava after they leave Gan Eden. It's exactly the same thing. So as far as how something like this works, Ibn Ezra says it's not necessarily a miracle. If God spreads them out, then the logical consequences of this is eventually they're going to have a different language. So it's not that God does something crazy to their brain and they start speaking in different languages. He spreads them out. If they're in different places, eventually the language is going to change. So okay, so we still have one or two questions that are open, or we have a lot of questions that are open. And is the Chet Eitz Hadas one of technology? If that's what's going on. Now, one person who says that it is Rav Yoel ben Nun, as usually he says something different than everybody else. There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin who says that Gentiles have to keep Sheva Mitzvos b'nei Noach. Now, there's also a sheet of Rav Elazar who says, no, that's not true. They also are chayiv on Kil'ayim. How does Rav Elazar know that they're chayiv on Kil'ayim? So Rav Yochanan quotes a pasuk, Ve'etz hadas tov v'ra lo sochel. How do you know they're chayav and kilayim? Because of this pasuk, ve'etz hadas, you shouldn't eat from etz hadas tov v'ra. What the heck does any one thing have to do with another? The only way Rav Yochanan makes sense is if you assume that the etz hadas tov v'ra was kilayim. It was a combination of different types of fruits, vegetables, things that are usher. And that's essentially, according to Rav Yochanan, interpretation of Rav Elazar. Rambam paskins like Rav Elazar, so it's not like some kind of weird shita that's floating around there. And one shita about what Adam and Chava ate is a chita. And Rav Yoel says that a chita has a very complicated chromosomal structure. So if Rav Yoel is correct, then you have this thing that is kilayim. It's made out of different things. It has a complicated chromosomal structure. So essentially what you have is something complicated, and the idea of Adam eating this fruit of the Eitz Hadas is he wants to advance technologically. Where is Rav Yoel getting this from, aside from this? From Rashi. Remember what the Nachash says to Adam and Chava. B'yisem kelo kim yodei tov v'ra. What does that mean? You're going to be like God. Rashi's comment there is yotzer olamot. You're going to create worlds. That's what Rashi says about the pasuk. How do you create worlds? So one of the things Rav Yoel says, the most logical thing is, you have this fruit, it's made out of all kinds of complicated things, and if you can figure out the complexity, then you can create worlds. So even without Rav Yoel, we have Rashi, Yotzer Olamot, and then what happens is, and Rav Yoel then has a very long footnote about the dangers of genetic engineering. Is genetic engineering a problem about eating Eitz Hadas Tov V'ra? We're not going to go in there. But essentially, that's what he is saying. And Rashi says Barei Olamos. So what? And even without that, the idea of the Yisem Kelokim appears to mean I don't want limits. I want to be like God. I don't want to be a human being. I don't want limits. And that seems to be happening in terms of the technology of Migdal Bavel. They want to keep going. They don't want to stop. Well, if I want to stop somebody, how do I do it? One way is, like we said, the communication. But if I spread them out, then they're less strong. So that's another thing that is going on here. So essentially what we've said so far is that the Chet of Migdal HaBavel seems to be a repeat of Chet Adam HaRishon. Chet Adam HaRishon seems to be something about power. It seems to be something about technology, and that's essentially what's going on with Migdal Bavel as well. So, I want to see what I could do in 5 minutes. So that's one approach. The approach is technology. It's a repeat of Chet Eitz Hadas, and that's essentially what is going on here. The punishment is the same. What is going on is the same, and that's one approach. So I'm trying to figure out what I have time for. One interesting thing that was mentioned by Rav Tzvi Grommet and Rav Yonason Sachs, you have two things that happen here. You have the Mabul, and you have Migdal Bavel. According to the Pasuk, it's called Bavel because Hashem mixed up the languages. What does Mabul mean? That things are mixed up. You have God divides the upper from the lower, you take it away, and the upper waters and the lower waters are mixed up. So essentially, both Rav Tzvi Grommet and Rav Jonathan Sachs notice that the word for Mabul and the word for Bavel is exactly the same one. They're both being mixed up. And what they try to say is, you have two sins on opposite sides of the spectrum. By the Mabul, everybody's doing what they want. They're breaking rules. They're doing things that B'nai Elokim or take B'nos Hadam. There's Chamas. They're breaking it, this law and that law. What's happening in Migdal Bavel is exactly the opposite of the Mabul. You have this very, very strict regimentation. You're trying to build this thing. And so in a sense, you have the same word for both. Mabul is mixed up. Bavel is mixed up. But the sins are exactly the opposite. One is breaking laws. The other is strict regimentation. So I just want to get this in. So that's one approach. I don't know if we're going to have time to read this inside. Whoever wants to. Another possible approach is something a close friend of mine, Rabbi Shalom Carmi, wrote for First Things an article called Babel and Brexit. Now, those of you who know anything about Brexit, what's essentially going on here? Forget about everything we've said until now. He's going on a different track. Brexit means you have this European Union, all the nations are together, Migdal Babel, and you have these people in Britain who want to be separate. And it's possible that that's what God is doing here. This is not a thing on Tanakh. He just mentions it, that there seems to be a parallel. And what he does is he brought in two shitos. One is the Ran, and the other is the Hamek Davar. We're not going to have time to read it, so I'm just going to summarize it for you. The Hamek Davar essentially sees Migdal Babel differently than what we've seen it until now. He sees Migdal Babel as being a totalitarian state. Well, if I have a totalitarian state, why do I need a tower? Well, maybe you're the most likely one. You're going to do something, actually you also, two of you, are going, I'm the head of the totalitarian state, so one of these two guys are going to do something I don't like. So I have to be able to watch them from the tower. That's how the Hamek Davar sees Migdal Babel. Why does a totalitarian state need a tower? To be able to watch everybody. And that's what's going on with the Devarim Achadim. And that, and also because normally the opinions of people are not the same. But they wanted Devarim Achadim. So they have to make sure that everybody's thinking exactly the same thing. And it's possible, and he gets this to some extent from the Midrash. He says Nimrod tries to put Avram in the fire. Why? Because Avram thought differently than everybody else. So one of the things about Avram, who is to some extent the answer to Migdal Babel, is that Avram thinks differently than everybody else. That's why Nimrod wants to put him to the fire. And that the Ran, what I did here is Arbabel's summary of the sheet of the Ran, because the Ran says this thing in about a million different places. Now, in the Holocaust, my mother was able to get away because Hitler wasn't in control of everything. He was, so she was able to get away to Romania. It wasn't under his control. Do you want, so the question is that the Ran is facing, what kind of government do you want? Do you want a government with centralized control? So one of the things that the Ran says, you want a government with centralized control if they're tzaddikim. If they're rishayim, then you don't want a government to have centralized control. Because if there is centralized control, there's no place for the tzaddikim to run to. They can't flee anywhere. So to some extent, the Ran sees Avram running away from Nimrod. And the fact that he can go to Canaan means that he has a place to run away to. Supposing Nimrod, who in the Midrash is in charge of Migdal Babel, is in charge of Canaan. Can Avram run away there? The answer is no. So the Ran, in terms of government, he sees, and to some extent this is a debate too, to what extent are different forms of government dependent on virtue? People are asking this, does democracy work if people don't have virtue? Here he's saying that centralized control doesn't work if you have Rishayim, because if the Rishayim are controlled everything, Tzaddikim have no place to run to. So that's how the Ran sees it. So the Ran and the Hamek Davar are to some extent in sync. And what essentially they're saying is that you're talking about a certain authoritarian, totalitarian state, and essentially that is the problem with Migdal Babel. So we summarize that very... So we have two different approaches. One we had to go through for a long time. This one much shorter, and that's essentially it.
Thank you. Why didn't God like technology?
God didn't like technology because there's no limit. If Adam lives forever, there's no limit. If Adam wants to be like God, there's no limit. The problem isn't necessarily the technology, except according to Abarbanel, it is. So according to Abarbanel, God never likes technology, and the raya for that is the people who advance technology are Cain's children, who are probably not looked at the best. That might be a raya for the Abarbanel. But according to the approach that we have here, God doesn't like technology that is unbounded. If it is unbounded, people can go crazy. The same way with eating the Eitz HaChayim, you live forever. Forever is an unbounded state. So what God doesn't like is the unbounded nature of these things. If it goes too far, it can be used for anything. There's no limit.
Sure.
Right, yeah. Thank you.